It's good to see everybody.
And you.
Thank you. And just so you know, I am alive, alert, awake, and enthusiastic. I'm doing quite well. I have zero jet lag, so you're... Anything that goes wrong this morning, I'm without excuse. if you were here Wednesday night and you heard the horror story, well, I've had those horror stories in the past, but this was not one of them. I'm happy that, you know, that it's one of those times when I'm really glad that I did not travel with Mr. Wilson. You know, I'm sure the traveling with him is enjoyable. Even in adverse circumstances, he just tended to have more than his fair share of adverse circumstances on this trip. So mine, the worst I could complain about is I think I might have had an hour delay on one flight or two or something like that. So, which is nothing when you get to so many flights and so much traveling. So, really great trip, though. And I'm sure that you'll get chances. I think Gary's going to be talking tonight some during the report of the Spiritual Revolution about Italy and what we did in Italy. And eventually I get a chance to tell you what I did in Ghana. But it was an excellent trip. Very good. I can say it was very, very encouraging to get back to kind of seeing everybody that I had worked with, had been dealing with, and seeing how everything's still going, you know, a year and a half later. It's interesting, when we first started talking about coming to Bozeman, there were comments made by parties that will allow to remain anonymous this morning that, you know, what good is it going to do you to come back here and then your work collapse in 6 months? Everything you've done, spent the last 10 years. And my comment to whoever told me that was, I put more than 10 years into this. Do you think I'm interested in seeing it collapse in 6 months? Do you think I'm going to leave it if it's going to collapse in 6 months? Well, we're about a year and a half later now, and it's going just as strong, if not stronger, than when I was there. So that was really exciting. I was encouraged by that. You know, you kind of wonder a lot of times if, you know, just by sheer personality, if people are there by the power of your personality, and if you're not there, then what's going to happen? Well, I wasn't there, and maybe they like having my personality gone. yeah, maybe so. Maybe you guys need me to leave now, right? So, but anyway, it was really exciting to see, and they've actually even expanded. You know, on Lord's Days when I was there, we were going to two different places. We had Sunyani in the Japic room. This past Lord's Day, in 80 degree temperatures, by the way, thought you might like to know that. Told Jennifer this morning, I said, it's a little cooler this morning than last week. I don't know. But we had three places that we were at based on a new assembly that the guys that I trained have started. Started with mainly people kind of from the original congregation, but they managed to get somebody that I scared away. They managed to get them back. So, no, it was one of those cases where people take breaks for a while. This guy took a break for about 5 years. And his first Lord's Day back was last Lord's Day. And he said, been gone for a while, but back now. And that's with he and his family of eight. So that does something. Okay, let's go to Matthew chapter 4. I have no clue what you guys have been covering for the last 3 weeks. I haven't had a chance to listen. Actually, I haven't even had a chance to look to see if it's online to listen to Rick's and Gary's stuff. I'm sure that was very good, knowing who I had to do it. So I'll just have to pick up where I left off 3 weeks ago, about a month ago. That's Matthew chapter 4, and we kind of went through all the temptations of Jesus. As we've been going through, we looked at a lot of the prophecies. Not the prophecies, but we've been looking at the quotations where the New Testament quotes the Old. And using that to help us to figure out how to interpret the Old Testament. Also using that to help us kind of get to see how these New Testament writers use the Old Testament. And help us to figure some of those things out. So as we've been going through, we looked at a lot of things with John. We looked at a lot of things with the birth of Jesus and some of the quotations, the times when those things are quoted. We were finishing up last time with Jesus' temptation by Satan and kind of how he handled that situation. And particularly with the scriptures that he had memorized, and he's quoting them, and then we were talking about his application. I talked some about how the way that Satan was tempting Jesus was with the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the boastful pride of life. And so you got samples. I think you had a lot more temptation going on than just the three we have here. But you have a kind of a sample of each one, and kind of how Jesus dealt with it. And in each case, Jesus dealt with it through Scripture that he had memorized. And he's quoting it back, and he understood it. He understood, we had a chance to look at too, how he understood not only the actual words, but he understood the context, he understood the meaning, what it was even referring to. Particularly when we talked about how Satan tried to quote Scripture back at him and try to convince him that he needed to do something he didn't need to do. And Jesus was able to cut right to the meaning of the Scripture that Satan quoted. And then, kind of, you remember, Satan was quoting about, he'll give his angels charge concerning you and you won't strike your foot against a stone. And then we looked at how the section that Jesus quoted was actually, if you go back, it was actually putting God to the test as regards Massa and Meribah, and how they were actually putting them to the test to say that God is not among you, which is really the thrust of Satan's thing, is if you are the Son of God. So, anyway, the one that I didn't get to hit everything I wanted to hit on was the last one there in Matthew chapter 4. It's where Satan had shown him all the kingdoms of the world, said, if you will fall down and worship me, then Jesus told him, he says, I will give all this to you if you will fall down and worship me. And so, what I want to talk about just a little bit this morning is Satan's true desire there. You can see that what he was wanting was to be worshipped. Let's back it up. Let me see if I can get this where I want it. I think we're going to be in, Isaiah maybe? Let's go to Isaiah 14. See if that's the one I want. Yeah. Isaiah 14. You got a couple places where you get hints of what went on before, the whole rebellion of Satan. That would be Ezekiel 28. I believe that's it. And then Isaiah 14. In Ezekiel 28, you kind of get the whole idea of how Satan was, how he was perfect and how there was nothing in him until, that everything was perfect. God had made him in a great way. And then till evil had been found in him, or sin was found in him, and he fell. But in Isaiah chapter 14, verse 13, actually, let's back it up to verse 12 so we can get a little bit more here. Isaiah 14, 12. He says, "How you have fallen from heaven, O star of the morning, son of the dawn. You have been cut down to the earth. You who have weakened the nations. But you said in your hearts, I will ascend to heaven. I will raise my throne above the stars of God, and I will sit on the mount of assembly in the recesses of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will make myself like the Most High." See, you have here Satan saying, I'm going to ascend up. I'm going to be like the Most High. I'm going to ascend to heaven. I'm going to raise my throne above the stars of God. You get Satan's whole picture then is he wanted to be like God. Which is interesting then that the temptation that he gives to Eve is, if you eat this fruit, you'll be like God. You ever notice that sometimes people accuse you of what they themselves are guilty of? I don't know if you've ever noticed that one. But usually, that's just a side note, that when people are accusing you of things, odds are they're probably guilty of it themselves. You're kind of going, where did that thing come from? Well, it came from within them. That's kind of their motivation, what drives them. So that's kind of what you got with Satan, too, when he's going to Eve and saying, hey, you eat this, you'll be like God. Because that's what he wanted. That's where his mind was at. That's what his thoughts were. So he's saying, hey, this is what I really want. Well, you see that coming out then with the temptation when he's tempting Jesus. He says, hey, see all this stuff? I'll give it all to you if you will fall down and worship me. That's all he really wanted. Just fall down, worship me, and we'll be good. Now, we're going to have to work a little bit on worship this morning. Let's go back over to Matthew chapter 4. Four comes before five. Okay, when you're looking there, I'll throw a little Greek at you just for the fun of it. There in verse 9, he says, "All these things will I give to you if you fall down and worship me." Now, those of you who've done a little study on this, the worship there is proskuneo, or a form of it. Okay? The fall down is something different. I don't remember what it was right now, but it isn't what you would normally think of in worship and all. So, what Satan's looking for here, he says, fall down and worship me, is that prostration. Proskuneo just is prostration. It's laying down flat. In verse 10, Jesus said to him, "Begone, Satan, for it is written, you shall worship the Lord your God and serve him only." Okay, so you shall worship. Okay, New Testament written in Greek, so Jesus is speaking Greek, or actually he's not speaking Greek, but it's written in the Greek. But it says, the worship here says, "You shall worship the Lord your God." That's proskuneo. That's, again, that falling down, laying down flat, which we will get to again in a second. And then the serve, says, "And serve him only," is the latreo. Okay, so you have worship, proskuneo, latreo, then is serve. And I'm not going to go through the details of all this. If you get really interested, Cleansing the Inside of the Cup, chapter 4. I believe is the one. Chapter 3 is Turning to the Lord. Chapter 4, I believe, is the one that you can read. So if you get really interested and you want to go, now, what's this latreo, proskuneo, how's that all work out? Go read Cleansing chapter 4. I'm sure there's some out on the little bookshelf out there. You can grab it and go through it. Very interesting, very good. But in that, what you do get, and we will cover a little bit of it, is Old Testament, when they're talking about worship, it's a lot just very physically prostrating, physically laying down. What I want us to tie in a little bit this morning is to go back and see how this is quoted and Old Testament-wise, how that comes out. So, if we're going to do that, we got to go back to Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy chapter 6. Let's see just a little bit more about worship here. A lot of times, you know, and I think probably I'm making some assumptions here. Maybe I'm wrong to make these assumptions. But I'm making the assumptions that most people here have a good idea of the whole proskuneo thing. Definitely not all. Do I want to... trying to decide if I want to do any... Nah, we'll mix it in as we go. Okay, so... But so usually when we're thinking about proskuneo, worship, Old Testament, you think about like Abraham's day, you think about, you know, those Old Testament guys before the law, and you have worship that's going on. There's always an altar. There's usually an altar there where they've offered their sacrifice, their service, and then they are bowing down, they are laying down before it. Even if you get to the actual meaning of the Greek, you know, it's bowing down, it's laying down flat. But I want us to see just a little different aspect of it here. Look at verse 13. This is where he quotes. Deuteronomy 6:13. It says, "You shall fear only the Lord your God, and you shall worship him and swear by his name." Okay, now that's your quote. Remember, Jesus said, "You should worship the Lord your God and serve him only." Now, if you're looking at this, it doesn't line up very well. Stick your finger there, go over to 10:20, because it's also there. Deuteronomy chapter 10, verse 20. It says, you shall fear the Lord your God, you shall serve Him and cling to Him, and you shall swear by His name. Okay? And there's more stuff in there, clinging to Him and swearing by His name. But here, you know, it kind of lines up. You shall fear the Lord your God, you shall serve Him, you shall worship the Lord your God and serve Him only. Okay, now, looking at the two places in Deuteronomy, if you look in verse 20, you have two words. You shall fear the Lord your God, you shall serve Him. And then you also have the clinging and the swearing, but those don't come in the New Testament, so we're not going to cling and swear this morning. Okay? So, but we're going to talk about, here it says fear and then serve. That's in chapter 6, verse 13, he says, you shall fear only the Lord your God, and you shall worship Him. And then we have the swearing again. You swear by His name. Okay, now, verse chapter 10 says, fear and serve. Chapter 6 says, fear and worship. Now, does anybody else have little footnotes or the little letters, numbers that go next to that? Some of you do? Okay. Notice that the first one where it says, you shall fear. Yep, mine has a little number 1, Roman numeral 1. And it says, or reverence. Fear or reverence. And then, by the words worship, got a little number 2, and that's serve. It says it could be serve. So really, if you're doing your comparison there between 6:13 and 10:20, in verse 13 where it says worship, really it's more like the whole serve thing. I think Jesus got it right when He said, you shall worship the Lord your God and serve Him only. Okay, it's serve. So 6:13, it says, you shall fear only the Lord your God, you shall worship Him, you shall serve Him, and swear by His name. Okay, so, which is what 10:20 does say. Worship, or it says, fear the Lord your God, and you shall serve Him, and cling to Him and swear by His name. Okay, so, first thing is, that second one we're talking about, serve. You know, Jesus did a good job. He quoted well. It's serve. Now, the worship, though. The worship, Jesus said, you shall worship the Lord your God. You shall proskuneo, worship the Lord your God, and serve Him only. In Deuteronomy 6:13, Deuteronomy 10:20, the exact place that Jesus is quoting, it doesn't say worship there. It says fear. You shall fear the Lord your God. Now, this is the part that we want to get. I mean, I went in, did one of these cool little things. If any of you have ever seen an Englishman's Concordance, anybody ever seen one of those things? They're pretty cool. It's worth checking out sometime. I was happy on a trip to Oregon Peaks this past year. We had a fun time. That time I did travel with Mr. Wilson, and things went much more according to schedule that time. But we were traveling together, and I had my computer out. I had just put this new Bible program on it, and we were discussing some different things. And I introduced him to the Englishman's Search. It's an Englishman's Concordance. It's actually a book, and what it is, you know, a lot of times you use a concordance to do a word search. So like if you want to find the word worship, pull out your concordance, you look in there, you find the word worship, and it gives you all the references where in the English or whatever version it is you're using, whether it's the King James Version, like a lot of the Strongs and things like that use King James Version, but it gives you all the different places where the word worship is used. The Englishman's Concordance does the same thing, except it does it on the Greek or the Hebrew. So, let's say like the word worship, you're going, look it up and, you know, you're reading there in Matthew chapter 4 and you read worship the Lord your God and serve Him only and you see, you know, you do your interlinear thing and you see that that's the word proskuneo, then you can actually, using your Englishman's Search, you can go through and you can get all, the Englishman's Concordance will give you a listing of all the times that proskuneo is used in the New Testament. Pretty cool. It gave even Mr. Wilson a few things to ponder over as we looked at that one. But It also then does the same thing then with the Hebrew. So, I tell you that just so that's a side note in case you're, for your own personal studies, you decide to check that out sometime. But that's what I did with this word. You know, because I thought, well, how is this thing being translated in other places? You shall fear only the Lord your God. I mean, the curiosity question was, if Jesus said you shall worship, does the Old Testament say worship in other places? Is this just like maybe a translator's thing where they said fear, but really it could be worship too? What's it really talking about? So I looked it up, went through the whole thing, and you know what? It means fear. You know, it's fear, be afraid. You know, just about every time it's quoted, the word fear or afraid is in there. Okay, now, what can we learn? Jesus made a mistake? I don't think so. So when Jesus says, when he's bringing it over into New Testament terms for us and all, and the translators, if you want to, usually the New Testament quotes the Septuagint, so the Greek translation. So when he says, worship the Lord your God and serve him only, here it's fear only the Lord your God. Worship and fear go together. Worship and fear go together. When we talk about proskuneo, and you're talking about laying flat before someone, you know, a lot of times, you know, and maybe I will do this. I might do this just for the fun of it. But it doesn't seem real to us. I mean, when was the last time you laid flat on the ground before somebody? Anybody done that one recently? Push-ups, okay, maybe some push-ups, yeah, okay. I don't know if you were proskuneo in there. I'm not sure that would count if you're doing some push-ups. I had a case once, long, long ago, in Ghana, and in some of these other cultures, there's a whole lot, shall we say, a whole lot more of an outward form of respect than we have in America. Good and bad. You know, in America, I think, you know, we've made some recent transitions. I think when they came over and they're setting up the government here, they had the whole idea that, you know, we don't want all these royalty, we don't want the dukes and all those kind of things. So I think they had the idea that everyone is royalty. I think in recent years we've kind of switched the other way, that nobody is royalty. You know, so nobody is to be honored, nobody is to be respected. But in some of these other cultures, like Ghana, there's still some of those outward forms. Well, there was something that had happened years, and I say years ago, because this was even before I was married. And I don't remember this family that I was staying together with, a family, they had part of the house, I had part of the house, and we had some kind of difference of opinions. I don't remember what it was. And I was pretty upset. I don't even have any clue at this point what it was about. But I was pretty upset. And when they came in to talk to me, they came in like this. And this is how they were talking to me. I'm sitting there. They got their hands on my leg. Isn't that really uncomfortable now? And they're talking to me like this. Now, that was pretty uncomfortable for me in that position. But the whole point of it was they were showing some submission. They were showing some humility. What if I did this? How's that do for your comfort level there, Mel? You like having somebody? It's hard to talk to me, right? See, that's, you know, sometimes some of these things, we can talk about the terms, we can talk about worship, and we can talk, you know, but put it real here. Make it real. You're laying flat on the ground right in front of somebody. I mean, if Mel wanted to, he could have stepped on my head and there was nothing I could have done about it, because I wouldn't even have seen it coming. Other than maybe looking at, you know, the bottoms of his feet or something. But see, that's, you know, that whole proskuneo. Okay, we're talking about being flat down. But in that, there is the tinge of fear that goes with it. You know, I know we're Americans and I know that we're not afraid of anybody. But imagine yourself in a society with the king that can say, off with your head at any minute that he wants to. And fear that's there. You know, and that's why, you know, it has the reverence as another option there. It could also be reverence. Okay. But there is fear that goes with it. You know, that's one of the things I said, you know, in my learning center downstairs. One of the things that I had to do at the beginning was I had to make sure they were afraid of me. You know, and I know that that sounds really terrible, and I know that that doesn't go with modern day psychology, but you know, it works. You know, the very first thing was they had to fear me. Now, if you ask them now, I think they like me most of the time. And, you know, and I don't think they really are conscious of the fact that they're afraid of me, but they don't want me to get angry with them. They don't want me to get upset with them. You know, I've jokingly said that I believe that just about every student in the learning center that I have, any learning center I have ever had, be it in Ghana where everyone is hard and they're used to a hard life, or here in America where they're not quite so used to mean people. But just about every student that I've ever had has cried at some point, you know, because of my treatment of them. You know, some are a whole lot easier to get to that point than others. But everybody usually gets there at some point because they need to the point where they're actually afraid. See, but once you have fear, then there's some place you can go. You know, Proverbs talks a lot about the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. I was reading the Proverbs, supposed to be reading with the Bible reading program, but I lost my Bible reading program, so I was just kind of even guessing. So in Proverbs, flip over there for just a second, Proverbs chapter 2, I think that's where I was at. Made some interesting connections this morning that kind of fits in. So let's start from verse 3. Proverbs chapter 2, verse 3. It says, "For if you cry for discernment, lift up your voice for understanding. If you seek her as silver and search for her as for hidden treasures, then you will discern the fear of the Lord and discover the knowledge of God. For the Lord gives wisdom. From His mouth comes knowledge and understanding." Yeah, I just had an interesting thought this morning as I was going through that. You know, it's a lot of times people want to get knowledge, they want to get wisdom, they want to be really intelligent in this world. But the fact of it is, anyone who's really seeking for understanding, seeking for knowledge, in the end they're going to discern the fear of the Lord. And then that's going to lead them to true knowledge. It's going to lead them to those things. So the worldly wisdom doesn't even fall into wisdom's category anywhere. Because actually seeking for that wisdom is going to lead you to the fear of the Lord. But notice it's the fear of the Lord. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. See, there is a place for fear. I know that that's not supposed to be, you know, we're supposed to be, you know, all motivated by love. And okay, that's true. But it starts with fear. You know, there has to be some fear before there can be anything else. Fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. So when we're talking about worship, and we're talking, you know, when Jesus says, "Worship the Lord your God," and he's quoting, and the real quote is, "Fear the Lord your God," there is fear in worship. Because there is that recognition of who it is that you are proskuneoing yourself before. You know, I proskuneoed myself before Mel, but I really wasn't afraid. You know, I can't say that I was worshiping Mel because there wasn't any fear there. I wasn't really afraid that Mel was going to kick me in the head or anything. But if you're proskuneoing yourself before a king, if you're laying down flat before a king, there's going to be some real fear there. So fear and worship do go together, because there's a recognition of who it is that you're bowing down before. So when we get over to John chapter 4, and Jesus says that those who are the true worshipers are going to worship in spirit and in truth, and we can talk about New Testament worship and how it's our spirit laid down before God, then unless there's some fear there, there's not real worship going on. You know, I know I've heard Mr. Wilson say this before, that he's heard some guys, he heard somebody preach once that he doesn't know the fear of the Lord. All he knows is the love of God. And he said he could tell by the guy's preaching that he doesn't know the fear of the Lord, because he was twisting Scripture all over the place. See, in true worship of God, there will be some fear tinged. I mean, it will be tinged with fear, because you know who you're dealing with. You know, when you go into the boss, and the boss is the one that can fire you on the spot, you might guard your mouth a little bit. You might be a little bit careful about what you're going to say, knowing that this could mean that your daily bread is going to disappear. Now, ultimately, the fear of man is not where we need to be, but the point still remains. God is still God. And even when we talk about Jesus, and even when we talk about how He's raised us up and seated us with Him and all the great things that He's done, this is true. But just also remember who it is you're dealing with. You're not dealing with the guy down the street. You're dealing with the one that holds all things together. The one that says boo and your body flies apart. See, remember who you're dealing with. I think if we remembered that, it would impact the way we lived. I think a lot of times we get a lot of the stuff. We get the grace of God. We get the new creation. We understand all that. Yeah, this is really great. True. But don't let familiarity with Him breed contempt. You know, even in my learning center, every once in a while, the students need a little bit of reminder of who I am. I had somebody come back. I'll allow her to remain anonymous. But Wednesday night, I came back in. You know, and I got in Tuesday night, about 11 o'clock, 8 hours or 7 hour time difference. So, you know, 7 hours ahead. You know, so when I'm getting in, it's, for me, it was 6 o'clock in the morning, you know, but body wise or whatever. And so, you know, I've trying to go to bed at 6 o'clock in the morning, but having been up all night, it was okay. But Wednesday, got to Wednesday night, and I was still a little tired, you know, and I thought I was feeling pretty good, but Matt and others said that they could see in my eyes that I was still tired. You know, so I came into potluck, and, you know, people saying, hi, welcome back, which was very nice, by the way. Glad that you didn't notice that I was gone. But one of the students, not one of mine, but one of the students said, hi, Steve. So I wandered over and very gently grabbed the shoulder. Mostly gently. Okay, slightly gently. And said, what is my name? Mr. Ice Noggle? Thank you. Hi. Now that you've addressed me correctly. See, sometimes we need those reminders too. The discipline from God, a lot of times that's just God saying, hey, remember who I am? Make sure that you are treating me as I ought to be treated. You know, and we'll tie this up. All that stuff on worship, that's what it's really about. You know, when Jesus says, you know, Satan said, hey, bow down and worship me. It wasn't possible for Jesus to bow down and worship him, because he wasn't afraid of him. He didn't have that fear in the good sense. The fear of, yeah, you're really in authority over me. I mean, Satan's trying to flaunt it there. Hey, look, see all the kingdoms of the world? This is all mine. I can give it to you. And Jesus is going, yeah, right. I know who really owns all this stuff. See, that's when Jesus says, worship the Lord your God and serve Him only. That worship is going to come with a little fear in there, remembering who God is.
And with the indwelling of the Holy Spirit, we also should not fear Satan.
Excellent point. A Christian only sins when a Christian forgets who he is. Only time. Why fear Satan? You know you have the Holy Spirit, the Spirit of God dwelling in you. What do you have to fear? You forget who you are, though, and then that's where the fear comes in. So, right, that's a good comment, though. Anybody else have any other comments here?
In reference to parenthood, and you are tough on the Kids and Learning Center. They do have a certain level of healthy fear, but fear brings on respect. Respect brings on relationship, and the relationship brings on the love. And that's really the goal. And it's the whole process that we go through, that our kids go through with us, we go through with the Lord. It's the exact same process, starting with fear. So parenthood, I've said this before, parenthood, in instilling that fear and respecting your kids, parenthood is a physical preparation for their spiritual life.
Right. On that, I think it's going to be 1 Timothy chapter 1. I think Lori Shanahan was the first one that pointed this verse out to me. And it became, in Ghana, pretty much what controlled why I did what I did. You know, the choices and things that I would make, particularly with the school. 1 Timothy chapter 1, verse 5 says, but the goal of our instruction is love. From a pure heart, and a good conscience, and a sincere faith. You know, and that's really, when you're talking about the Christian education ministry and the whole, everything that's going on with that, that's what it's all about. The goal of the instruction is love. Now, as Tom was rightly pointing out, whether it's, and that's with parents as well, parents and children, fear is the beginning. It does have, you know, fear is the beginning of wisdom. Before they can figure anything else, they got to be afraid. And then, as he pointed out, the fear leads to the respect, and ultimately, it comes down to they're going to learn love from you. I mean, it does no good. Let's say that I'm talking in the learning center. It does no good for them to be afraid of me if they don't know that I love them. See, so that's where it comes down to. They know that I love them, and that's where they also learn to love. But you're right. Parenthood, and see, this, because the educational ministry, the Monday to Friday educational ministry, and parents are working together for the same goal. Love from a pure heart. You know, that's the goal. Same goals there. It's going to work the same way there. Okay? But ultimately, yes, Tom is right that it is a physical picture of the relationship with God. Which is also why a lot of times when you're studying with people, they have a really tough time figuring God out because maybe their home lives were a wreck. Which is why we need to make sure that ours are good so they can figure it out.
The purpose of the law was to teach us that if we didn't do what the law said, that we would die. There was fear involved in that, fear of death. In the New Testament times, we do what we need to do because we love, because He first loved us. We do what we do not because we have to, but because we want to.
Right. That is exactly correct. Perfect love casts out all fear. So, as we love more and more, it's just like with your children. You know, as they start figuring you out and figuring out that love is what controls you and why you do what you do, and then they respond in kind, as they're older, the relationship you have with them will be different as you mature. You know, so perfect love casts out all fear. The point, ultimately, we get to the place where, true, the love of God would totally compel us, would totally control us, because we recognize totally who He is. You know, even with parents and children, even when the children are adults, there still is some respect that's there. Regard, you know, and that's why the fear and the reverence go together. Fear, you know, recognizing who you're dealing with. Now the difference, a little bit of a difference is, with the parent-child thing, eventually the child gets to the point where the parents don't really have authority over him. Between us and God, he still does. Now, ultimately what he's looking for is the relationship where he doesn't have to exercise that authority. But there's just a recognition of it. And out of love, then, as Tom was pointing out, that's what controls you and compels you to do the things that you do.